in a publication called Graduate Theology and the Human Experience of Disability, Robert Anderson challenged seminaries to think about the presence or absence of people with disabilities in their institutions and what that means for their theological perspectives. Because, like other people of minority groups, people with disabilities bring unique perspectives to theological study and biblical studies. So that is what we're doing today, is challenging our thinking. People who are blind have been present in biblical studies for many, many years. And we have pointed this out in the paper. For the sake of time, I'm not going to go through that aspect of the paper. On our handout, we have our email address, and you can request a full copy of the paper if you wish. We did some study. We interviewed some scholars who have been in seminaries. We also interviewed, did some surveys of faculty and staff who provide support services to scholars with disabilities. And we asked questions about their fears and their concerns and what they see as the biggest problems in access for scholars who are blind. And so those things provided the background for the paper. We found out that there are a lot of fears. And one of the biggest barriers is the thing that people say, I don't know how to do this. And that's the barrier that we want to eliminate today, is the statement, I don't know how to do this. Because what that statement does is it creates a climate in which people can't dialogue. It makes the scholar go away. In some cases, it makes the scholar quit and never try again. And that's what we don't want. Are scholars who are blind actually studying biblical languages? Yes, they are. They are studying at both the undergraduate and graduate level. We have both done this. They're studying both Greek and Hebrew, sometimes both languages together. Sometimes 2 years, sometimes many more. And some are studying Latin. A few have studied Aramaic. And some have expressed interest in additional languages. And I will be getting back to that point later in the presentation. I'm now going to give this to Lauren, who will be discussing barriers to study. There
you go. That's it. So as Sarah has said, blind scholars have been part of biblical language study for many, many years, but that often hasn't happened without first confronting a substantial amount of barriers. One of the most important barriers, I guess the most predominant barrier, would be the lack of access to text. There are very few texts available, and often obtaining textbooks can be rather difficult. There have been various ways in which people have sought to get around these barriers. One of them has been hiring readers and scribes if necessary. Some have been exempted from the language requirement, which is what we don't want to happen. And then others have brought in their own technology to the classroom and have done a substantial amount of research to make sure that they could have an accessible means of accomplishing their study. So there are various tools with which blind biblical scholars use in their study of a language. And those include the use of Braille as a primary medium, as well as screen readers and other technology. Braille is a tactile system for representing written language. It is not transliteration. It is a means of representing written languages. It is composed of a 6-lot cell, which is 3 dots high by 2 across. It was invented by Louis Braille in 1829 in France. There is a Braille code for over 170, there are over 170 Braille codes. The Hebrew and Greek do have completely defined codes, and the morphology, the syntax, the spelling, the grammar, and all other aspects of written language are completely the same between the, between the Braille and the print, and between the Braille and the printed codes. For example, in the Hebrew Braille code, which is what I'm familiar with, there are representations for the alphabet, as well as the nikudot, the shva, the dagesh, and subtrope. In addition to Braille, it is critical that blind scholars of biblical language use have access to screen readers, which are software applications that are loaded onto the computer and convey information in accessible form to students who are blind. This involves audio output through a speech synthesizer, often known also as PTS technology, text-to-speech, and that can be accompanied with an external Braille display, which one can liken to a monitor in that it represents as one is looking at a text on the screen, the text can be read tactily using the display. The display consists of a certain number of pins that go up and down and refresh as the text is scrolled on the screen. There are various sizes of displays, anything from as little as 18 cells to as great as 80. One of the limitations of the Braille display is that only one line of text can be shown at a time. In addition to the Braille display, the screen reader, and actual use of Braille, it is also important to have access to what is known as a Braille transcription software, Duxbury, which can be used to take a printed document and automatically transcribe it into Braille. This is extremely useful when there are not already hard copies of text available, which in many cases there are not. So if a student has access to an electronic document of a text, the student can then emboss that into Braille and have it readily accessible. And a final tool I'd like to discuss is OCR technology, which is optical character recognition. This is extremely beneficial when one does not need to have diacritics or nikudot in a text. One of the severe limitations is that when there is a text in which nikudot and diacritics are essential, as would be certainly the case in grammars and lexica, this is not always the most effective, but when you don't need such markings, this can be very useful in that somebody can take an electronic text and they can OCR it, which would take that the scanned image of the text and create a text file, which can then be embossed or read on a Braille display. And finally, an embosser is a machine which will allow a document to be printed into Braille on heavy specialized paper for that use, which is extremely beneficial in allowing the scholar who's blind to emboss any document that he or she may need for use when that document is not commercially available, which is usually not the case. And to very quickly go back to issues of barrier, one of the issues also often encountered is that Braille transcriptionists one might often find errors in text in terms of nikudot not being placed in the right position, which is of course a problem in terms of grammars, because you absolutely need to have that information conveyed properly. And so having access to these tools that I have mentioned enables the scholar to have wider access to material and hopefully will allow them to not necessarily have to always encounter these barriers that previous scholars have had. So I'm now going to give this over to Sarah, who will be discussing the possibilities and more learning techniques.
Braille is, as she mentioned, a writing system. When we switch languages in Braille, what we do is, since we only have 6 dots to work with, we exchange the dot patterns. So if you can imagine taking the print letter P, and in your mind, that letter is no longer a P. Imagine that it is something entirely different. It has a different meaning. And so the conversion takes place not in the lettering system, but in your mind. And that's what we do with Braille when we switch languages. We have the same thought patterns, but different meanings. So, for instance, the same dot pattern in Braille represents the English letter J, the Greek letter omega with a circumflex accent, the Spanish letter jota, and the Hebrew letter yod. It creates some really interesting pronunciation mess. I have gone into a Greek class and read the letter upsilon as a T sound, because in Hebrew, it's a T sound. It's a tab with a dagesh. So my Greek students go, what are you saying? So those are some things that we encounter when we do Braille. And I wanted to mention that as we go on to possibilities in research. Because one of the possibilities that we can do because of this is we can use Braille to represent any language. There are some languages, even as we have Braille in 170 languages, there are languages that don't have a Braille system. We don't have Braille for Akkadian. We don't have Braille for Ugaritic. So as you can imagine, we can't go on in biblical studies right now without creating that system. It doesn't mean that it can't be done, but it means that we have to do extra work in making it possible to study those things. But if I was to go into a PhD program right now and say, I want to take this class, what response would I get? I don't know how. And I would have to create how. It's a lot of hard work. And we have to think outside the box in order to do it. The thing that goes along with this possibility is more limitations, because our transcription software cannot manage whatever we create until we get with the software companies and teach them how. Which is what I've recently done with Greek. I've created a partnership with a transcription software company, and in the last 2 years, we have come up with the possibility of transcribing automatically books into classical Greek, where we've never had that possibility before. It's a tremendous opportunity. And we can now also do it in the same document that can transcribe English. So we can transcribe a commentary that has English and Greek in the same document. The caveat is that whatever documents we feed into that program have to use Unicode fonts. How many of you type using BibleWorks keyboards? I hear some. How many of you type using a keyboard and you go, I just type, I don't know what it is. It would behoove you to learn what it is. Because when I was a teaching assistant at Anderson University and we had a Greek student, we fed a document into her computer and it all came out as English because it was BibleWorks font. And the thing with BibleWorks font is it tricks your computer into thinking that when you have typed an A, you have typed an alpha. And when you have typed a semicolon followed by an A, you have typed an alpha grade. Or whatever it is. I'm following by memory, so I made it up. I didn't memorize the keyboard layout. So, but when you put those characters in, your computer actually doesn't know what it is. It's a trick. So when, for instance, you use the Logos keyboard, anybody use Logos keyboard? Yay! When you use the Logos keyboard, it feeds real Greek characters into your computer. So your computer actually knows, hey, this is Greek. This is a real Greek character, and it uses what's called the Unicode font. It's a technical term, and I'm not going to define it in here. It's defined in the paper.
but it knows that it's really Greek, and you can put it on somebody else's computer. You can even put it on a Mac, and it knows, wow, this is Greek. Hey, somebody's celebrating. And so you can feed it to any other computer, and it knows that it's Greek. You can feed it to somebody's screen reader, and it realizes it's Greek, and it shows real Greek up on the Braille display instead of English. It's really fascinating stuff. So I would encourage those of you who are typing in Greek at least to familiarize yourself with where to get it, because then you are at a serious advantage. How was our time?
You're good.
Okay. Yeah. I want to go over special learning needs. This is the most common thing that people marked on their surveys is what we don't know next to where to get textbooks. They didn't know what kind of special learning needs a person who is blind brings to the classroom. And in doing this, one thing I want to say is that I focused on learning needs of people like myself and Lauren, who are not using print of any kind. And that is not to say that somebody who has a few sight problems is not important, because they are. I had a student in my Greek class who had cataracts, and she didn't tell us until the middle of the class. And it was very important to know, because she couldn't see the diacritics. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage you to create an environment where your students feel comfortable disclosing, because you need to know that stuff. But here, we're talking about people who can't see any type of print, because there are some really special things to know that you need to modify. I already talked about the pronunciation issues. It creates some really humorous moments. It doesn't have to be scary. It's just something to understand that when somebody's making one of those pronunciation errors, just identify that letter so that they can then realize what they've done as they're learning that new alphabet. When I switch to a new language, I don't read other languages. When I start learning Greek, I didn't learn Hebrew. I didn't read any Hebrew while I was doing Greek for 3 months. I'm getting better at doing that switch now, so it's not so necessary. But it was really important in those early stages of changing languages that I learned how to handle those things. Thank you. The visual nature of your course. If you use a lot of verb tables, those are things that need to be modified so that there's not so much column material. Because it's hard for a person who is blind to go from one column to another and keep their place. So sometimes it's important to present things across in rows if you're typing out documents for that person. The other thing that I wanted to mention as a big thing is parsing exercises. Do you ever require your people to draw lines and circles? Mm-hmm. Work with your students to develop an alternative way to present that material. As a final thing, what are we still doing? A lot. We have not tested any accessibility features on a Mac. Anybody using Macs? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have not checked on any accessibility features in Macs. We still have a lot of software to test on the PC. The only ones we've tested are BibleWorks and Logos. And I know we have had presentations here at SPL on importance. We haven't tested that at all. We don't have a fully accessible Hebrew screen reader that will actually read to us in Hebrew. We only have features that will put it on a Braille display. And as I mentioned, we still have a lot of work to do in accessibility of new languages, and we would like to do that. Because what we would like to do is see scholars who are active in ministry, fully active and able to do their exegesis, and scholars who become professors, because some want to do that. And so that's where we're headed.
Thank you very much. time for a question or two. If there are folks in the audience who'd like to ask Sarah or Lauren a question. Yes,
Sarah. Yes, Sarah, thank you. One thing just to note, that Vibeworks does do Unicode. It has to be set up that way, but it can. They are ready to do all Unicode now. So
that's good to know. It's been a few months since I've tested.
So they're all Unicode.
Thank you.
How have you handled access to lexicons?
Software.
How?
So far, the best one that I've used myself was Logos, but we're still in the early stages of checking out with Bibleworks, as you mentioned, so we still have a way to go.
Does it read audio to you, or is it you're able to convert it to Braille with one of the methods that you described?
So far, I've used a Braille display. So we're still working on. We also have somebody who's working with an outfit called Bartimaeus Alliance for the Blind, who is converting some lexicon material into what we call Braille format. But it's a very slow process. So in my early Hebrew study, I had somebody looking up things for me under my direction.
Thank you all very much.